Jack, so good to have you back, mate. How have you been? It's been a while since our first chat. What was it? Pre-Christmas, I think. A lot's happened since then. How you been?
Yeah, no, great to speak to you again. Mate. It has been a while. I remember when we had that call and it magically ended up as a podcast when I least expected it. No, things have been well. It's been a cold winter. Been skiing recently.
Good work.
And that was just after Christmas. Took away a bit of the January blues, nice. And unfortunately, came a bit of a cropper and had to go to hospital for an X-ray. Luckily, there wasn't anything wrong, but I twisted my ankle and sprained my ankle, which is something I've been doing a bit too much over the past five years.
Nightmare.
I think. So having to actually get some physio now, which I haven't really done seriously before, and I've just started doing.
Yeah.
So it sort of brings it home, really. Whilst I'm not a pro athlete like a lot of these guys you're speaking to on the podcast, injury seems to be the biggest thing to get in anyone's way.
It certainly does.
For achieving greatness.
And are you taking the physio seriously?
Yeah, I am, because it's the first time. Well, you know, I'm not getting any younger, like all of us, and I think if you want to stay in the game and keep doing things, you've got to kind of maybe not be as foolhardy as you were when you were about 18, 25 or something like that, you know?
So, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So I'm taking it seriously.
Well, that's good to hear. It is so boring, but it's one of those things that if you don't get it right and you keep doing it, you end up paying for it much further down the line.
Exactly.
I had a bit of an issue with torso muscles in my foot over a year ago now. I thought I got past it. I went and I went to a mate who's a physio, did some pretty painful physio. Actually, they hook you up to these sticks needles in your foot and then hooks you up to an electric charge and then just shocks you through your foot, so your whole foot is kind of pulsing with the electric shots with the electric shocks. It's really unpleasant. I thought I was past it, and been getting back on the running again, which has been just unbelievable. More for the head than anything else, you know, just still taking it quite slowly, but this last couple of weeks, I can feel it again. It's so boring. So I think, like you, mate, I'm going to have to have it properly looked at and get on the physio again.
Yeah. Well, I can completely sympathize, because, like I said, over the past 5 years, you know, I've been going out and just doing 10 milers, nothing great. And just occasionally, about once every 6 months, I'll just land funny. And you sort of run back home, and it's not enough to stop you from running, but you sort of get home and you think everything's fine. Then the day after, it blows up to the size of a golf club.
Yeah.
And then you're off games for about at least a month or something like that, but at least running anyway. So, I mean, it's really, really frustrating. And
that's it.
I think certainly something that arrives certainly happening to me a lot more since I turned 28.
Yeah. And then you're so desperate to get out for a half decent run when you can finally do it again that you overcook it and back to square one.
No, it's tough, but it's good. And I just think it shows how important it is. You've got to look after yourself if you want to keep going.
Absolutely.
You know, and you want to keep doing things, and you don't want someone to turn around to you one day and say, okay, you can't run anymore or whatever. You know, I just think it's more of a self-maintenance project, you know, like, when a car's done a certain amount of mileage, you know, I guess you've got to do a few more oil changes and things. So I'm looking at that
100%, mate. No, that's a positive way to look at things. A lot's happened over the last couple of months. We've had some very decent guests on indeed. So we kicked it off with Charlotte and we moved on to Humphrey. So those are out in the wild at the moment. And then the two episodes with Tom Jolly, which I'm going to be putting out hopefully this evening, with a bit of editing luck, and then Charlie Bell as well. It's been a really interesting kind of variety, and I found it incredibly enjoyable speaking to these different people, and have very much kind of had different takeaways from each one, and the way it's kind of been framed as well. Just thinking back to Charlotte as well, she's got her qualifying. Her competing Ironman in May coming up with Team GB. So very exciting there. I was kind of, it was making me think again, you know, how can I get competitive again and get back in the mix of these things? And so for the moment, I think running, I'll just park. But perhaps a swim bike option. There are, it's a growing niche. A number of competitions now offer it. I think so many people are just buggered their knees basically, or whatever it is. So I'm going to have a look at that one, mate. And then, and then with Humphrey as well, I started doing a couple of things differently, actually. Well, first, it's given me great motivation to get back in the gym. I had a kind of token gym membership, which was getting limited use. And since then, I've really tried to get a bit more consistent. This last couple of weeks, actually, has been hectic, especially with the pod taking up a lot of my time. But trying to make a bit more of a plan there. And one thing that he did mention as well, going out running and just not listening to music. And that's when the majority of his ideas were coming to him. I've now ditched the headphones.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Yeah, I mean, I remember listening to that part specifically, and it's really interesting because I don't know about you, but I go through stages of sometimes I will listen to music and sometimes I won't. And it's for extended periods of time. And that was really interesting. I mean, I think there's a few interesting things about his particular case. It's just, I mean, it's not evident the switch from playing 80 minutes of rugby and off the back of that. And I know he had his own sort of issues health-wise and things like that and why he had to stop playing. But, you know, it's interesting, isn't it? Because it's not the evident choice that maybe somebody, a former rugby player, would take, like extreme, ultra sort of...
And completely
endurance, absolutely. You know what I mean? So it's quite a step change, isn't it? It is really interesting, and I think you went into a lot of depth on what convinced him to make that journey. And I find that very fascinating.
Yeah, it was a great transition, and like you say, you know, you don't expect 100-kilo, you know, guys to be putting in some long mileage. I mean, when you typically think of your endurance athlete, the whippets out there who are not a huge amount to carry, and as a result got pretty decent power to weight ratios, but he's taking things in a completely, you know, not conforming to the stereotype at all, which is just great to see. And also really kind of bringing in the focus on the strength training and using it to kind of complement the rest of his training as well, which I'd always had it as a bit of a sideline, really, and it was more of a kind of inconvenience that you should probably do something with, but not the end of the world if you don't. You're strong enough already as you are, you know, it's fine. Well, actually, you know, it should have been kind of an integral role from the outset. It's an interesting one. And then, when I put out Tom's one, much forward to sharing that one. Just unreal athlete. I mean, the level this guy's operating on, and a really bold choice as well. There's not a huge amount of people who would just be willing to put it all on the line and go, I'm going to move down to the south of Spain. So what he's done is he left the army, went off to work for 3 years. To kind of get things set up, get some more money in the bank so he could go buy himself a place down in the south of Spain and just dedicate himself to training full time to see how far he can take this. And I don't know if you saw, but I posted up kind of his moment of realization when he was challenged to a race by one of the guys in the army. And it was across Hadrian's Wall, which we know all too well. And he did a bit of training. He came fifth, and he was like, "Oh, that's quite interesting. Maybe if I really put my mind to this and put some kilometers down range, proper training, I could even win this." Goes back the next year, signs up again, smashes it, sets a new course record, and beats the guy in second by over an hour. And he was like, right, this is it. Here we go. I think I know what I want to do now. It was incredible to hear kind of his story and how he's progressed from there. He's literally just this weekend done another race in... it's called Trans Gran Canaria, so it's over in the Canary Islands, and kind of from one side of the island to the other. I think it was, yeah, just about, I think it was about 125K. No, it might have been 170K. I forget the exact stat. It was a bloody long race, yeah, 12-hour number. It came third. So yeah, solid result there as well. So I'm really excited to see kind of his career progression. And now targeting, you know, UTMB, see how he classifies there. So it's gonna be a really interesting one. And then kind of the other end of the spectrum. Well, not the other end of the spectrum, but a different kind of order of athlete altogether. Charlie Bell, who sat down with earlier this week. So by no means, you know, professional athlete in that sense of this is my goal, this is what I want to go out and achieve. He's just been doing absolutely insane races, kind of consistently over the last about 10 years, actually. Well, no, 7-8 years. And so it was actually Tom who put me onto him. So I think you should have a word with Charlie. I think he's got some really interesting story. And I was like, okay. He's like, yeah, you know, he's just come off this race. It's called the Atlas Mountain Race. It's I was like, interesting. I'm going to have a look at that. And I looked it up. And this race was like, what was it? It's like 1,300 kilometers. So yeah. And then it's 20,000 meters of elevation over like just over a week. I think he did it. And the bloke came 21st. And it's like nuts. And then I started doing my research and kind of going a bit more into him, taking it back as to what he'd done over the time. And the year before, he'd done one that was almost identical, but through the Balkans. And that was like a similar distance, but 27,000 meters of elevation. Just nuts. And then not only had this man cranked out a double Ironman, he'd also cranked out a triple. And I was just struggling to comprehend like how he'd done this. And more mind-blowing than anything, the triple was run a mile loop. So you just do a mile, go around, do another loop.
Around and round.
Absolutely horrendous. Like from a mental perspective, because obviously you got your supporters every mile and your aid station or whatever. So the temptation to kind of sack it in, like if you're really hurting, where you can just, you know, it's very straightforward. You've got that temptation every mile. Whereas he was saying, you know, it's much different if you're out in the middle of nowhere, literally, because these bike packing races, you're in the middle of nowhere, completely unsupported. So it's like, well, you just got to get to the other end. Like, there's no one coming to get you. But the triple Ironman, my God, right, it made the hairs on the back of my neck stand up.
Yeah, no, I think you have to be a very special person to do an Ironman in the first place. I mean, and as you said to me before we started chatting, you know, the double Ironman sort of quite unimaginable. Yeah. Quite an unimaginable feat to sort of even consider. And then, of course, there's these people doing triple Ironmans, and you're just like, you know, is that possible?
Absolutely. We finished it off and he was like, you know, there's always the quadruple that could potentially be on the horizon. And I was like... absolute madness. So we'll see where that goes. Again, really looking forward to putting that episode out.
I look forward to listening to that.
Yeah,
one.
No, absolutely, mate. I'll let you know. I might even send you the raw audio file. I'll give you a sneak preview. But we got some other interesting athletes who we've been in serious conversations with. So, which I'm much looking forward to over the next kind of month or two when these people are available. I don't know if you caught, but recently there's been the Talisker Whiskey Atlantic Challenge. Are you up to date on this one?
Indeed, yeah. Yeah, I'm aware of what it is and what it entails.
Yeah.
But apart from that, I haven't delved into any great detail. Yeah. But do fill me in.
So, rowing across the Atlantic... So you kick it off from it's from Spain, but I think it's actually the Canaries, and then straight across the Atlantic. So 3,000 miles, and typical finish time is 2 months. And you got people who do it in teams. So you can have, I think you can have up to a team of four. All the photos that I've seen, there's, has it been four or is it three? I think three seem to be more typical. And they're on these incredible boats that they're like pretty chunky rowing boats. They've got two cabins at either end, one for your kind of kit and the other one for sleeping in, or completely, again, unsupported. You've got kind of your solar panels on the side of your boat and one thing or another. But then you also got teams of two. So I was following this, I think they're called like Mr. and Mrs. C's, which is like a married couple who I think they're in their 40s or 50s by the looks of it, which, you've got to have full confidence in your relationship to...
Yeah.
2 months at sea, yeah. Very close quarters. That's a definite make or breaker. And then I came across this girl, Miriam Payne. She is 23 years old, and she was going to row this with a friend of hers. And so I think they're both in like university rowing club. I think it's Glasgow Uni. And I was looking through her feed, and it looked like a month, maybe 6 weeks before her friend bails. And she'd had some cardiac complications, and so decided, I don't want to put this this trip in danger. Suddenly something happens to me, when you're out in the middle of the sea, and again, there's no one around, you're completely on your own. And so unfortunately she couldn't do it. So Miriam was by herself and decided to do it. And she's just broken the record, so the solo female record for this particular challenge. It just absolutely blew my mind. I couldn't... Okay, obviously you've got a physical side of it where you are hardly sleeping and you are completely alone. In the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, you are closer to the people in the International Space Station than you are on people on land, to put it into context. And so from a mental perspective, especially when seas start picking up. I was having a look through Insta, and she was there kind of very kind of cheerful and tucking into a Terry's chocolate orange and a can of Iron Brew. It's just like, this girl is made of something else. So we've been talking, and hopefully by the end of March, she's going to be finished up working on a yacht, and it's going to have some time. So I'm much looking forward.
Well, that's extraordinary.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah.
That's absolutely extraordinary.
Have you you come across any people that you've got your eye on?
Yeah, no, there's a few people. I think for me, this is obviously a real moonshot for this podcast, and not to say that it would never happen, but I think hearing from someone, there's obviously been a Netflix documentary that came out, I think, last year, or maybe even before that. It's by Nirmal Purja.
Oh, yeah.
The guy that did the 14 Peaks.
That is a moonshot indeed.
It is.
Man has blown up.
Never say never.
Absolutely.
So that he's obviously quite an interesting one.
Exceptional, though.
Another one I came across as well, and this is through interest sake as well, there was a former parachute regiment officer actually called Johnny. Well, his Twitter handle is JohnnyMH. I don't know his full name, but he's been, how it is on Instagram. You follow certain people and you come across others. And this guy ran the Marathon du Sable in full body armor in aid of a military charity.
Things are like 20 kilos.
And he had the plates and everything, So, it must have been pretty hardcore. So, I think he's another really interesting one, probably a bit more achievable than the former I mentioned. So there's a couple there, and there's obviously someone that you've got on your list as well, John McAvoy, which I find really, really interesting. You know, and I think just his he's done some interesting things, but I just think where he came from is a little
bit different. His story
is. You know what I mean? Starting in the position that he did. Yeah, his story's really, really interesting. And to get someone's perspective on that, I think would be very wholesome, I think. So, I mean, there's just three people, I guess. I mean, the list is quite long, but I think those three would top it for me right now.
Yeah.
Although I know the first of our examples, that's just insane. Yeah.
He's doing, actually, I saw, he's doing this really interesting documentary. So, what's that bloke's name? Spencer, I want to say Matthews. It might be another, it might be a different one. But Spencer, anyway, this guy shot to fame, I think, on Made in Chelsea. And then he's gone on to do...
That's who I thought you were alluding to.
And then he's gone on to kind of do a number of things. He's got a couple of very successful podcasts. Anyway, I had no idea that his older brother was the youngest guy, I think the official stat is the youngest British guy to climb Mount Everest. And but what happened was on the way back down.
Yeah. I think I heard this. Yeah. There's a tragedy occurred.
Yeah. I mean, he essentially got left on the mountain, and died. I recently read, Nim's book actually. And yeah, it's pretty brutal from like a mountaineering perspective. You know, you get to a point where helping other people, you can seriously risk your own life. And so you've got to make these very tough decisions to kind of essentially leave people behind. You know, if you're running out of oxygen or, I don't know the exact details of what happened to him, but anyway, he was left behind and died. And so it seems that someone, this was like over 20 years ago, and so it seems that someone who'd been climbing Everest sent a photo across, and they said that we think we found your brother. And so from then, they've gone on to make this documentary, which I don't think has come out yet. And great research. I can't remember the name of the documentary. But they've got Nims on board, and they've also got who's that bloke? Bear Grylls to do like a mountain rescue operation to go and find this guy's brother and bring him home. Which seems like an incredibly moving film. So we'll see. We'll have to see how that comes out. Yeah. And then on John McAvoy. What a man. He's recently I got quite excited, and then I realized I wasn't, I couldn't apply because I'm too old, but he's recently done this initiative. He's been backed by Nike for a long time now, but with Nike and this charity to help young people in the UK from kind of inner city locations, and to bring him out to the mountains. So he's, I think, permanently based in France now, in the Alps there. Bring him out, train him up for the UTMB Ultramarathon Series. It just looks absolutely stunning. So he's, unbelievable bloke. I mean, starting off as a bank robber, discovering sport through the prison rowing machine, and then going on to set, you know, numerous world rowing records as well as UK records. And I think hilariously, like, the locations are put as like, it's not like Her Majesty's prison, whatever, it was just like the neighborhood that the prison is in. If we could get him on, it'd be unreal to stick some questions to him and find out his latest. Absolutely, mate. Also, there's this concept that I've recently come across. I think being involved in this pod and constantly on the lookout for extraordinary athletes, I'm coming to contact with a lot of competitions that I didn't even know existed. So this concept of the backyard ultra, I had no idea what it was. Anyway.
Yeah.
So it's pretty universal in terms of the concept, but obviously each course is slightly different. So they're not that comparable in that sense. But what it is essentially a 4 mile loop. And so everyone lines up on the start line and you have an hour to run 4 miles. Not an issue. And so you run, and so once that hour is up, if you run 4 miles in 50 minutes or 45 minutes, then you've got a 50-minute break where you can go and rest. The hour finishes, everyone lines up on the start line again, and you go again. And so this keeps going and keeps going until the last man standing. And so I came across these two Dutch guys who just broke 100 laps. So they did 101 laps. So I'm talking 404 miles. And so what was that? Yeah, so 101 hours just nonstop.
Unbelievable.
I could not fathom the concept, how you survive. I mean, just purely from a sleep perspective, just walking zombie by, I don't know, day two. So yeah, Marin Geertz, we've been having a chat, and apparently he's got some time next weekend. Fingers crossed, with a bit of luck, it would be so good to hear how the hell he achieved that, what was going through his mind, how he kept going. We'll have to wait and see. But these ultra marathoners just pulling off some unbelievable feats. Just 150, 250K. I mean, and it's a really interesting segment as well, because there are some elite women who are wiping the floor as well. So it would be fantastic to get some ladies on as well. There's one I come across, Camille Heron, who is just on another level. So yeah, we will see. But again, a bit of a moonshot. We're going to have to work up to it, mate.
Yeah, definitely. Well, no, I mean, I think keep attracting the sorts of athletes you already have. And I think the more you build up, the more, you know, your reputation and the podcast reputation will improve, and you got a better chance of getting people like that, you know, and
fingers crossed,
hearing their stories.
But
there's some impressive people out there. And I think it's good, 'cause, you know, you hear these people doing these things in passing, but actually, you know, putting them on a podcast where people can actually hear the questions people really want to know. Like what drives them to do it, what gave them the ideas of doing it, how do they keep going, how do they train, you know, these are all really important things that inspire people to get out and maybe do incredible things themselves.
That's it, mate. So. Well, that's the goal. That's the goal.
I mean, hearing Humphrey speak about the Welsh 3000, I'd never heard of that before. It sounds great. I that's something I would quite like to do myself one day.
Absolutely,
but,
mate.
Maybe not on 4.5 hours like one guy did, but yeah, I mean,
unreal effort. He was like this bloke in his 60s or something. But that's it. Like, so,
yeah, I really
was something it? Like that. I think if I remember correctly from the interview, but I just find it staggering how kind of, if you're in the niche, you know who the main players are, you know who the top athletes, you know what's going on, but if you're not, it doesn't get any coverage at all. And I've been really shocked how, like, some of the level of these guys doing extraordinary things out there. And if you're just looking at, like, hard data, it's like, you see, I don't know, these celebrities who just bring nothing to society whatsoever, and they're followed and watched by millions of people. And then you got these guys, you know, these people who are putting in unbelievable shifts and get very limited coverage at all. So we've got to do something about that, mate. if we keep this going,
yeah, no, we definitely
5 years time,
this will. No, this will up the profile. And I think people that truly deserve sort of like public recognition, you'll be able to sort of shed a light on them and say, "What about these guys
with
over here?"
With a bit of luck, mate. With a bit of luck, we've got to keep growing. Yeah. Got to keep putting out decent content. Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah.
So we'll see what happens, mate. Yeah. We'll see what happens. But yeah, no, it's good. It's been good to check in and
catch up
on some of your ideas as well for other guests. Got to keep pushing the envelope and finding top athletes for some inspirational stories to get on.
Well, just, you know, the channel seems to be going really well and really well done. And,
thanks, mate.
Yeah, let's see where it goes. I mean, it looks pretty bright so far. So
yeah, fingers crossed, mate. Fingers crossed.
Cool.
All right, mate. Well, it has been an absolute pleasure to catch up. And looking forward to checking in again sometime soon, after the next couple of episodes, perhaps. We can do another rain check.
Absolutely. Yeah, no. It's, a real pleasure.
All right, mate. Well, take care of yourself. Well, hang on. I think we're back in. So there was a significant amount of off-air chat that's just happened. And we thought that it could be quite hilarious to perhaps... This should go in. We'll see if it goes in the end, but it might go in. And just discussing about how the row in the Atlantic is absolutely terrifying. And apparently you get the most unbelievable ass blisters imaginable because you're on the seat backwards and forwards the whole time. And so...
Yeah. No, you can just imagine just a whole day, and it's a plastic seat. It's partly going to be ergonomic, you know, in any way whatsoever.
So on this last interview with Charlie Bell, he was telling me about his exploits in these last two epic bike packing races he's done, and he was telling me a story so you just take one pair of shorts. There's no like spare kit or anything like that. You're just like in the same shorts for the whole week or however long it takes. And so he was telling the story of of this bloke who got into a sleeping bag and took his shorts off to like air and just like put them on top of his bivy bag. The following morning, shorts were nowhere to be seen. So,
in what sense?
Like someone had taken them, or like, I don't know, some like dog had gone off with them in the middle of the night. I don't know. The shorts were no more.
My God.
So what he did was, so you got your waterproof kit. He got his waterproof trousers and he put his waterproof trousers on. And then to provide himself with a bit of padding, because obviously, you know, you don't have the padded arse in your waterproof trousers. To provide himself with a bit of padding, he wrapped his like down jacket around his ass, and I think he was like halfway through, and so still had what 700k to go, and made it to the finish line, but the chafing was so severe that he was hospitalised like as soon as he got to the finishing line. Like took those trousers off, and like the chafing. I think it's just essentially a peeled arse. I mean, I don't even want to think about it, but no, he's got some.
No, but God,
he's got some good anecdotes for.
Just the pain. Imagine, imagine when he was just going. I mean, imagine he was like, you know, 350k towards the end, and just he must have been an absolute clip. Mate. He must have been in so much pain.
Because the thing is, I was just thinking about it, like, okay, you're 250Ks, but like 250Ks on a road bike is a significant distance.
It's not that far.
I mean, it still take you a while.
It'll take you a while, but it's doable, right?
If you're in the Atlas Mountains, where it's basically like up, down, up, and it's like, there's no tarmac. It's gravel / like rock, scree. Like you've got to push your bike in a number of places because it's so steep and intransitable.
Good God.
Horrific. I
horrific. This is the thing, you know, and this is why it's so important that you speak to people on this podcast that do things like that. Because, I mean, you know, when we were younger, we're like, oh, you guys are crazy going out and doing this stuff on the middle of the night and all thing. And then you realize, and then you talk to these other people, and you realize you're just nothing. You're a speck in the ocean compared to a lot of these people going out there and doing these crazy
things. Put something into context. And also, what I found fascinating is having the opportunity to actually ask people, like, but how? But, like, what does that actually entail? Like, one thing is, like, yeah, you go off and, yeah, no, you just got to feel well and you got to do your training or whatever. But it's like, okay, what things do you actually have to bear in mind? Like, all these kind of, like, basic admin things and, like, yeah, I made this mistake or I didn't know about this, which you just wouldn't.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, isn't it? Because you get so sort of, like, wrapped up in the challenge itself, you forget about these big, well, this guy obviously didn't. He just had, like, an unfortunate quirk of fate. the mystery of the phantom cycle shorts, you know what I mean? But you know, you forego any admin whatsoever, it can just spell doom for your entire experience, you know? And it's just, I guess it's just so important to be prepared.
Absolutely, doom. Yeah, that's it, mate. Right, and on that bombshell, I have to run.
Yeah, me too, buddy. Me too.